Welcome to the San Jose Hockey Now podcast. This is Shang Peng, editor-in-chief of San Jose Hockey Now. You can also find my work at MEC Sharks and on Twitter at Shang_Peng.
And I'm Keeg McNally. You can find me on Twitter at halfwall_hockey, at my website half-wallhockey.com, or at San Jose Hockey Now. We're back with our post-trade deadline show, Shang.
Yes, and it's been a long, long day. I'm still at Sharks Ice, as you can tell at the background. I'm never going home. I have a supply, endless supply of Coke Zeros here, and nothing else to sustain me for the next week or so, and I will rely on that. Anyway, though, it's been a crazy day. When I first saw news of the Hurdle trade, I double-checked my phone to make sure that Pierre LeBrun's name wasn't spelled L-E-B-U-R-N.
Yep.
And it's still a stunning trade. And anyway, before we get to that, though, I guess I just wanted to talk through sort of the I know that a lot of Sharks fans are upset, and I understand it. This might be the worst day in Sharks history. If you want to add on top of, besides trading a franchise icon like Tomas Hertl to your most bitter rivals, too, the Golden Knights, Logan Couture also announced that his season is over and there's really no sense when he's going to come back. And so really, possibly the worst day in franchise history, I don't know. But and this is my honest thought. I'm not saying these things because I'm just trying to say nice things. I actually really like this move for the Sharks, and we'll talk about it in a little bit. This Hurdle trade. And also I wanted to remind you guys, I know I've been quoting movies recently, but it's always darkest before the dawn, right? And that is genuinely what I see here, that it's tough right now. Obviously you just traded Fun Must Be Always to the friggin' Vegas Golden Knights.
Oh my God. Yeah.
You might see, brace yourself for this. You might see Tomas Hertl raising a Stanley Cup in a different team's jersey. But on the other hand, though, this was a move that needed to be made. Should have been done 2 years ago. And the rebuild needed to start then. It didn't. And that's a mistake that I think Mike Greer, to a large part, has rectified. And so anyway, I just wanted to remind everybody of that. So as tough as today is with the Hurdle news, with the Couture news, that I do believe that brighter days are ahead, or at least they can be. The Sharks obviously have to execute on their draft picks, but the idea, the plan, I think, is in place.
Very well said. I have many, many thoughts. Before we do the Hurdle thing, let's talk about Couture a little bit, because I think that's kind of been lost in this news. And I have a whole segment about Couture that about Hurdle that I want to talk about. But I think let's talk about Couture.
Before we do that, though, I don't want to interrupt, but we are going to talk about every trade deadline trade by the Sharks. Of course, we're going to start with the big one, Tomas Hurdle. But then we're going to go to Duclair, Kakinen, Shimmick, Ohotiuk, and the acquisition of Devin Cooley.
Love it. So there is some other stuff that you can get to towards the end of the episode, but we are going to get the big.
If you're really hard, if you get to the Devin Cooley bit, then you're a real Sharks fan.
If you can make it through my emotional diatribe about Hurdle, then you can get anywhere. But let's talk about Couture, because this one is snuck out of the radar. And it honestly was something that maybe I thought might be happening this year. And before he came back, that I was kind of worried about was that his health might not permit him to play this year. And he even spoke about it a couple months ago that he didn't know if he would play, came back and then played six games and then just didn't feel right. And then sat himself out, kind of thing. And now after this emotional day, kind of just poured it all out and said basically he's not going to play again this season. Is that right?
Yep. And I just wanted to give you guys sort of the course of my day, just so you guys can kind of see what it was like. So I got here at 9 a.m. because I didn't want to be driving while trades happened. So I got here, I live in San Francisco, so it was a little, it's an hour drive down. So I got here at 9 a.m. On my phone, try to ferret out a Alexander Barabanov trade, Mikhail Granlund trade, a Miro Ferraro trade.
Yeah, you're trying.
That didn't happen. And I thought that those could be the biggest deals of the day, Ferraro or Sturm. For a hot second there, I thought that a Ferraro deal could happen. I've been kind of thinking that the last couple of days, but it didn't materialize. And so I didn't really report it. And so because I wasn't sure. But anyway, though, I was tracking hard on that one. And so anyway, I am working and I get to the Sharks media room, like I said, around 12 p.m. And then I look at my phone and I start looking at all these obviously fake Twitter accounts trying to trick us into thinking that the Sharks had traded their franchise player to their most hated rivals. And the Sharks were supposed to skate at 12:30 today. It was an optional practice, but usually an optional practice, you're still going to see 10 or so players, mostly the young ones, right? You'll see a William Eklund, you'll see Thomas Bortolo out there, right? A Hotiuk before he's traded, right? Guys like that, you'll see usually for sure a couple of veterans sprinkled in there, right? For an optional practice. So it was really noteworthy that as the trade was announced, details were trickling out that no one came out. 12:30, 12:45, 1:00. One person came out, Justin Bailey, but he wasn't in uniform or anything. He came out literally in a t-shirt and shorts and in shoes and just came out on the ice and looked like he just wanted to kind of fill the stick a little bit. he did that for like 5 minutes and he left. About 1:30, we talked with Mike Greer and David Quinn. And I'm going to release that soon. The Sharks may have released a video for that already. I'm not quite sure about that. I've been working on some other stuff. Just so you guys know, if you guys listen to this immediately, I have a trade grades coming out on NBC Sharks soon. And also, too, I've been on a couple of radio shows. And also, I helped to work Twitter spaces with my buddy Sinbin, Ken, from Vegas. And then also, I had to write that Couture season over story. Anyway, so we talk with Greer and Quinn, and we finished that. And you think, oh, now it's time to work. Quinn did do a justice and sort of setting out the scene for what happened, just how hard it was for everybody, how emotional it was. Thomas Hertl was in the building today saying goodbyes to people. Quinn shared this really kind of a gut-wrenching anecdote as for a Sharks fan, at least, that optional skate. He asked if anybody wanted to skate today, and no one raised their hand.
Yeah,
it was that kind of day for the Sharks organization. And like I said, only Bailey came out just for a little bit in t-shirt and shorts. And so really just, again, a stunning, a heartbreaking day for Sharks fans. And so they asked us, well, who do you want to talk to tomorrow? Tomorrow, the Ottawa game is an early game. Usually an early game, we don't have a morning skate for a 4 p.m. game. We'll just get coaches and players about 2.5 hours before the game tomorrow. And so we thought, okay, this is when I say we, I mean Curtis from Mercury News and Max from the Hockey News. We're usually the ones. If you don't like the choices for post-game interviews, it's because of us. We choose the players. And if you like them, if you think we picked the right guys, also because of us, because we pick them. So anyway, we thought, of course, that the two guys we should talk to, you know, Mark Edward Vlasic, played with Hurdle's entire career, sent out that crying tweet right after the trade was announced. Obviously, Logan Couture, one of Hurdle's best friends on the team, also has played with Hurdle's entire career. Those would be the guys to talk to, right? And we asked for them tomorrow. However, both guys prefer to talk today. And that makes sense, especially for Vlasic, because Vlasic will probably play tomorrow. And so talking about something like emotional, like Thomas Hertl, 2 hours before the game isn't really ideal. Couture, I don't know. I'm not sure if he's going to be at the arena tomorrow or not. But anyway, so they said, hey, Logan and both Cooch and Eddie, their nicknames, both Cooch and Eddie are going to be ready to talk today. And so about 3:00, we jump on Zoom with the both of them. And so anyway, that's where that kind of stream of stories, you know, Couture knew about, Hertl had talked to him quietly about the trade days and days ago. So Couture kind of knew was happening. Vlasic shared this terrific anecdote when he found out about the trade today, and Hurdle was in the building, that he went up to Hurdle and showed Hurdle that 2019 playoff clip, the double overtime goal that Hurdle scored against the Vegas Golden Knights in game six off of a Vlasic pass. And then Vlasic, you can just hear in his voice, he said, well, now you're playing for them. not angry, but just couldn't believe it, you know, considering all the bad blood between the two teams. But of course, he wishes Hurdle well and hopes that Hurdle wins the Stanley Cup with the Vegas Golden Knights. But anyway, so just a tough day. It's anyway around 4 o'clock. I'm able to start writing some stories and whatnot. And now I'm still here. It's about 8 p.m. And still have stories to write. You know, still haven't talked about sort of the emotional a part of the day for Couture and Hurdle. Couture on the call with us, you could hear him. He was breaking down. He was crying, thinking about Tomas Hurdle and losing his friend. And so anyway, it's been some kind of day at Sharks Ice. And who would have thought when we started the day that the Sharks and, of course, the Golden Knights, too, would be everyone always knows about the Golden Knights, that they're going to be the kings of the trade deadline, the epicenter of the trade deadline. But who knew that the Sharks would be the epicenter of the trade deadline, too?
Yeah, it's honestly, it was about like 2:50, and this is Eastern time. And I'm sitting there like, wow, the Sharks have done nothing. Like they've traded Duclair. they've done so little.
Shimmick and Costin was the only deal had to come through, I think, at that point.
Greer is punting this year. I was like, yeah, he hasn't done much this year.
Deals still come like an hour or so after
deadline. Exactly. I thought maybe he'd get something, but I was like, okay, he didn't do much this year. And that's what I was thinking at 2:55 or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it just honestly is, it felt like a fake Twitter account, like you mentioned, like it was coming out of sources that were not real. And then it kept getting confirmed over and over again. And then I'm listening to, NHL Network, and it's Kevin Weeks being like, there's something big happening. And it just kind of builds and builds. And then he's like, oh, it's two first round picks, but the Sharks are doing heavy retention. And that's what Kevin Weeks had said on the air.
Fucking Bob McKenzie, guy, it's semi-retirement. He comes out with the biggest scoop of the trade deadline, and that scooped, I mean, everybody. Elliot Freeman had no idea. Oh, none of the insiders that are insiders today had any idea, it seemed like.
It's just Bobby and McKenzie.
Fucking Bob McKenzie. In the words, to paraphrase the Catalina wine mixer, fucking Catalina wine mixer, fucking Bob McKenzie.
Fucking Bob McKenzie. And I was in Canada recently, and I did not try a Bobby Margarita, but now I really...
Now you need to.
I have to. And I, you know, one day I will try a Bobby Margarita. Today I have poured out many beers, including this beer for Tomas Hurdle, which I'm going to drink throughout the episode.
Well, I wish I had a beer here.
I know. Well, I think it's actually kind of a misstep that the Sharks Ice doesn't have more beers, because this is delicious.
They have bars here, but I got to walk over. I'm recording this, so yeah. Not sure if the Sharks will take kindly to me drinking a beer in their media room, too.
They might.
It's after
it's probably worth it today. Anyway, the point is, I had a lot of thoughts. In the beginning, I was really, really just sad. I had no thoughts other than a sadness. Like I didn't analyze this as like a person who analyzes trades or prospects or the draft, anything. I was just sad. I honestly remember Hurdle getting drafted. I remember what Hurdle meant to this team at the time. And it to me, Hurdle emphasizes, and I wrote an article on my blog at half-hockey.com about Tomas Hurdle after this trade. Hurdle emphasizes an NHL management group operating at 100% efficiency. Mm-hmm. In 2012, the Sharks were 100% efficient on the ice, in the draft, in trades. And not a perfect team. Obviously, they didn't win the Stanley Cup, so they're not perfect, but they're efficient, right?
Sure.
The only center from the 2012 NHL entry draft, the only center to be a top six center throughout his career, and top line, arguably, the only one is Tomas Hurdle. And he was drafted 17th overall. That's unheard of in the NHL entry draft. That's like really, really insane because almost every good center is drafted top 10. If you're projected to be a top six center, you're drafted top 10.
Is it? Actually, I didn't really think about that.
If you look through it, the second best is Chandler Stephenson, who was a fourth line forward.
Specifically that year or center. Drafts in general? Okay.
For that year and for centers, okay. 2012, Tomas Hertl is the best center. Mm-hmm. There's Philip Forsberg, who's a very good forward, but he's a winger. Bunch of defensemen. The only center is Tomas Hertl.
Who's the top center drafted in that draft?
Tomas Hertl. Oh, you mean you mean in general?
In the pick. Who's the highest? Sure.
I believe. Let me get the actual name. Because so he was 17th. First was Neil Yakupov, Ryan Murray, winger. Alex Galchenyuk was third. And you could argue
center or winger though.
He was drafted as a center, okay. And he did play center for many years. But obviously, he's out of the league, and there was many problems. Then they drafted like seven D's in a row. Mm-hmm. The next center was Mikhail Grigorenko, never got more than a bottom six. Radek Faska, never got more than a bottom six. And then Tomas Hertl was 17th.
Oh, so, and this, let me plug my story too, and it might make you guys cry more, before the Sharks made it to Prague, I wrote a story about Tomas Hertl and the Sharks' path toward drafting him. And I talked with Tim Burke. I talked with a lot of people about it, and I remember what Burke said. Burke said that their second choice for that spot was Toivo Teravainen, who I believe went next, but Hertl was the guy that they wanted. They thought that Dallas, I think, was 13, was going to get Hertl, but they went with Hoxha instead. And anyway, it's a great story. If you want to, I guess. Relive some if you're drowning your misery in some beer now, I guess that's a good one. So
as I am, but the point is that if you're looking for a center, is one of the most important positions in an NHL team, especially in the draft. It's them and like your top defender. Mm-hmm. Tomas Hertl is almost entirely that draft, like in terms of a center, and to get him at 17 is just. The Sharks got extremely lucky, and they drafted extremely well in that draft. And what he did was he took a Sharks team that was, you know, very, very good. They had made the playoffs 8 years in a row before drafting Tomas Hertl, 12 of the last 13 before drafting Tomas Hertl, and they extended their window for another 6 years. That's all they did by drafting Tomas Hertl. And that's what the power of drafting well can do for you, and what Tomas Hertl, a player like him, can do. Drafting well late and taking advantage of those later first round picks. So in some ways it epitomizes like what the Sharks were and what they are now. That whole regime is gone. All of those players, all of those built up faith and hope are gone. Like there's nowhere to be found. Couture and Vlasic and LeBanc, I think, are the last players from the 2019 playoff run, I think.
Yeah, and actually, the one I always forget is he wasn't part of the 2019 run, but Shark from that era, technically, Ryan Carpenter.
That's a good point. Yeah, he was around.
I always forget that.
A couple of years before, but
yeah.
So, and it just it makes a lot of sense that the team that was efficient for 20 years trades Hertl to the most efficient NHL franchise right now, which is the Vegas Golden Knights. Like. The most efficient. They use every bit of cap space, every loophole, every single draft pick to their expense at a 100% efficiency level. And it makes sense. Like, I don't know. To me, it made a lot of sense that Hertl went to their franchise. And they understand the opportunity there with Hertl and why they needed to acquire him at exactly the cap hit they did and for the price they did. All of that being said, I'm very, very sad that Hertl is traded. But it made a lot of sense for the Vegas Golden Knights why they got him. And then even more importantly, it made a ton of sense of why the Sharks did it. I think if the Sharks trade Hertl 2 years ago, they probably get a first and a prospect equivalent to Edstrom.
Yeah.
At the time. But they didn't. They made a mistake. They made an error this is my opinion, but in my opinion, they made an error. And a lot of people do. They didn't recognize what they needed to do to move forward for the franchise 2 years ago. and now we're paying for it. And the price to pay for it is two more third round picks and 17% retention. So that's about it. Like, I don't see it any more than that. This 2 years ago, this is a first in Edstrom or an Edstrom equivalent. Now it's a first Edstrom and two third round picks and 17% retention. It sucks, but here we are. And the Sharks needed to rebuild, and it hurts a lot, but it needed to be in 2 years ago. And Mike Greer is not afraid of it. Mike Greer doesn't have the emotional attachment that myself and a lot of fans have to the team, to the golden age Sharks that we love and we think hope will come back. He doesn't have that, other than he played for the golden age Sharks at some point. He doesn't have that. So we have to recognize that he's doing the job of an NHL GM, and this is the value of Tomas Hertl.
I think that blew my mind. I personally give Greer a ton of credit because he walked back sort of the last, in my opinion, the last bad decision of the Wilson era. It was Joel mm-hmm. that signed Hertl, but once again, this was from the Wilson regime. They were always going to re-sign Hertl, and I think Will was just working under that halo kind of. And so anyway, to walk back that move in this way, and we talk about you mentioned the third round picks and the money retained, which aren't great. I get that. But first with the picks, right? And I've talked about this in a couple places, but the farther picks go out, especially if they're non-premium picks or not first round picks or not even a second round pick, right? That 2027 third round pick, the Sharks are going to get that back in no time. You won't even know that was missing. The 2025 one, okay, that one's 2 years from now, so the Sharks may not be able to recoup that. I don't know, but the 2027 one, so far out. The money doesn't sound great. 6 years of retention, but if you think about it though, with the rising cap, right, it's a lot of money cumulatively, but per season it's 1.3 million about, right? And 1.3 million, the veterans minimum right now is just a shade over $750,000, $762,500, and with the rising cap, that really per year isn't that bad either. Yeah. And so the cost of kind of walking back that mistake from 2022 wasn't that great. And I think that's what Mike and his staff basically saw, that it took one hungry team. Look, I know that it's going to sound like this is like a Sharks planted information. I talked with the scout, an NHL scout, not with the Sharks, not with the Golden Knights. And he said he thought that that this was a desperation move by Vegas, considering Mark Stone's injury and that sort of thing, right? And considering Hurdle's age and the risk associated with Hurdle, right? And think about, and again,
Hurdle
too.
He's not a fast player. Hurdle's a slow player by nature. He's a guy that, like, if he loses a step, he could be literally unplayable at the NHL level.
I mean, he may have already lost a little bit of it, though he has had a very good season this year. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that he's quite what he was in 2018-19, but he is, I think, much better than he was last year. Yeah. But anyway, though, just think about, too, that, okay, think about Hertl last year, right, and how unhappy the fan base was with him, right, in general, not everybody, but a lot of the fans, right? Think about that. I'm telling you that you can get two first-round picks for Tomas Hertl. Mm-hmm. And this isn't one of those kind of bullshit, like, oh, it's a first-round pick, but it's from 2020 or 2019. It's a guy that's failed already, right, first-round pick. This is Edstrom, who was just picked, who in a redraft would still go in the first round, maybe higher, because I think his stock has risen since
probably a couple
draft.
Picks for sure.
Yeah. And so this is still a guy who is a first round pick value. Mm-hmm. And obviously the 2025 first round pick too, that's unprotected. And so if I told you last year you're getting two first rounders for Tomas Hertl, everyone would have been, oh, wow, really? Yeah. And of course you don't like the third round picks, but third round picks are, you can live with that cost, right? And then the retention, that is a little bit, that's the thing that's very bold. I wouldn't have expected the Sharks to retain 6 years, right? Yeah. But the AAV, the per year retention though, that's not that much. I mean, it's not that far from what they retain with Carlson, right? With Carlson, I think it was like 15% or something like that, right? Yeah. And so it's not that far from that. And so I don't know. I don't think too much about that. I think about, this is two premium assets David Edstrom, from what I understand, people I've talked to, a high character middle six center. So basically, he's not just a middle six. He's not going to be just a points guy, empty calorie points guy. He's going to be a guy that if he becomes who he should be, he's going to be a winner. He's going to be a winning player. Now, he's not going to be Tomas Hertl probably, but he's going to be a really good second line center is his ceiling maybe, but maybe ends up as a really good third line center. So anyway, a strong middle six center that you can win with. And that's very, very valuable. And so excellent prospect right there. And so I think it reminds, actually, all this reminds you, you just need a one motivated team. It's just like the Erik Karlsson trade in some ways. I mean, Erik Karlsson 2 years ago had the worst contract in the NHL. There was no way Heider Herre, you're going to move the deal, even if you took on a bunch of money, right? You weren't going to get anything back, and not a first round pick of all things, right? But you needed a desperate GM, a desperate team in Pittsburgh, trying to prop open their window as long as they could to get a Pittsburgh's first round pick, be it this year or next year. And the same goes kind of here, that while you understand, of course, that why the Golden Knights did it, it's their window right now. They want to prop that open as long as they can. They're the defending champs, of course, so they want to repeat. All kinds of good reasons for them to do it, right? So I'm not saying that's a bad deal for them. And like I said, I think that Tomas Hertl is pretty close to back to what he was a couple of years ago. So great player, outstanding player, even better off the ice. So you love all that for them, but obviously for the Sharks in their timeline, Tomas Hertl was wasting the last of the best years of his career here. There was just what was he going to do? He's not Connor McDavid. He's not going to carry them to a playoff spot just on his own. He's not that kind of player, right? And so just was wasting his best years here. And so anyway, also another part of the people also I think is kind of under said today is that Tomas Hertl had a complete full no movement clause.
Yeah.
So it's not like Mike Richt could just offer him around the league and best offer gets him. Tomas Hertl had to want to go to where he was going. And so Hertl wants to win. I know that that's a point of confusion that I think I've addressed on the podcast, but I want to say it again. If you're a new listener or whatever, when Hertl resigned in 2020, it was 100% not for a rebuild. Remember that they were still in the Wilson regime, where the Wilson regime was all about reload. We can keep this window open with this team. So it's like they kept going with I'm going to get very nerdy here, but it's like the DC Extended Universe movies. They kept coming out with bad movies that bombed their box office. It's like, no, we're going to get it right this time. No, we're going to get it right. No, we're going to get it right this time. Yeah. And eventually just had to kind of rip off the Band-Aid, cut the cord on all that. And so anyway, when Hertl resigned, I don't know. I still don't know specifically what was promised to him, but I know it wasn't a rebuild.
Yeah.
And I know that as a fact that it wasn't a rebuild. So a lot of people say, oh, Hertl should have known. And from a distance, right, obviously, right? Like, yeah, it looked like whatever the Sharks were going to try then to try to win with Hertl and Karlsson and Couture, that wasn't going to work, right? Like I could have told you that in 2022, but the Sharks didn't think so. Right. The Sharks thought that they could still somehow find a way to win with that core. And anyway, so Hertl didn't sign up for this. And so Hertl, I think I have alluded to, right? I think we talked about this in the mailbag, right? That like it's been my belief and there's been subtle signs from Hertl that this losing is not something that he wanted to be a part of, that he signed up for. And so if the choice was there, I think that he would want to move. The thing that we talked about was whether or not that choice would be there, of course, because the Sharks only had one retention spot. And I had no idea that the Sharks would be willing to retain 6 years. So I think that's the big thing there that I didn't calculate, that the Sharks would be willing to do that. I figured naturally that Couture would get the first crack at it if and when he ever got healthy again, right? And then after the same time, the Burns and Karlsson retentions would expire around that thereabouts that same time, right? And then it'll be Hertl's turn to leave. a couple of years from now. And that's what I sort of thought what might happen. But the Sharks are very aggressive. I think, like I said, the Golden Knights are very aggressive too. They offered a package that's reminiscent of what Hurdle would have garnered in 2022, and the Sharks jumped at it, which is, I think, again, very understandable with all this sort of extenuating factors, like I mentioned, you know, Hurdle with full control and all those sort of things. You know, Hurdle wanted to go to a team that was going to win, and if there's no team represents that more now than the Golden Knights.
Yeah. I'm happy for Hurdle. I really am. I think that Hurdle, he deserves it. He's, ever since he came into the NHL, he's been a bright spot for the Sharks, and he's been a professional, and he's conducted himself in a way that I think he deserves this chance to be on a team that's going to win. And he had that for many years with the Sharks, and it didn't work out. And I think you're right. I think he thought maybe the Sharks could turn this around faster than they could, and then Greer.
I think that's what they told him. Yeah, that's what they told him when Joe will resign him. I think that's what they told him that they.
And
that's
I think
what
Greer
they
kind of told him at some point over the last year and a half, like this isn't going to happen.
Maybe not. You know, we'll roll the dice with you guys with Erik Karlsson and Timo last year and see what happens. And they lose their first five games. It goes 0-5-0, and then literally a month into Greer's regime, right? Mike Rear, I think it was at the Hall of Fame, Hockey Hall of Fame. Yeah, he was attending, and he told a reporter, "Yeah, everybody is available except for Hurdle." I don't know if you guys remember that, but I was like, "Whoa!"
Yeah, he's like the same.
So much.
Yeah, and honestly, I don't know. At some point, 2-3 years ago, the Sharks had like so many contracts where it was underperforming. Right, like you had everybody underperforming. You had Martin Jones, Erik Karlsson, you know, even Brent Burns at some point. People were like, hey, is he worth $1 million
he's just
this
a good defenseman now.
Evander Kane.
Underperforming in the locker room. Performing well on the ice, but underperforming in the locker room.
And you had all of these contracts, and people were like, how the hell are the Sharks going to get out of this? And I think, I don't know, people wanted them to get out of it at the time, and I think they just waited a couple more years, and now they are. And
this is a rebuild.
Are upset that they're rebuilding, but to be honest, this is it. Like Vlasic's on the end of his contract. Couture is injured, and who knows about his playing status in the future. Those are the last two contracts that the Sharks have. Like that's it. That are big, and Couture Hurdle's now gone. And, yes, we have to eat some retention slots for next year. We have Burns that expires at the end of next year, and then Karlsson and Hurdle for a while. But I don't know. And even Greer said it in his press conference that like the one, like losing the retention spot, yeah, it sucks, but you might lose out on like a fourth or fifth round pick next year. But who cares?
I think the one deal that might have been screwed up by the Hurdle taking up the retention spot was Barrett Bonoff leaving town. And Greer said that there was a deal that was close. I got to check up if that was indeed a Barrett Bonoff deal. I think it was probably, but it could have been somebody else. Could have been like a Cunning or somebody else too. But okay, so you retain half on a Barrett Bonoff or the rest of or whatever. Yeah, you're taking half on a – you get a fifth. You get a fourth. You know, you get maybe a third, but probably not even, right? A fourth or a fifth, right? Instead, you retain on Hurdle. And of course, yeah, it's a number of years, right? But hey, it's Hasso's money. The cap is going up, so it won't be that much of the cap. And you have two first round picks to show for it.
And more importantly to me, like, and again, I'm not an NHL scout, but I've watched David Edstrom many times. I like David Edstrom. Like, he's a very good prospect.
This is a very good prospect. Yeah. Again, I know, I know it's not the most exciting of prospects in terms of, hey, you didn't get the, you didn't get Logan Cooley or something like that, right? You didn't get a blue chip guy, but you're not going to get those, right? In deals like this. We saw this with Timo Meier last year, right? Like, you're not going to get Dawson Mercer. You're not going to get Luke Hughes. The teams know who they've got, right? They're not going to give them up, right, for a guy that is about to be RFA. It's going to be very expensive in Timo, right? But still, you pick the right guy like a Mukko Mudulin, right? You see, that's a really, really good player. He may not have been the best prospect in the Devils system, but very, very good player. Edstrom, probably is the best prospect in the Vegas system, right? He isn't necessarily going to be a superstar, right? But he should be a very, very good winning player.
Yep.
And so I think again that I want to talk about the emotion of it, and I don't have the emotion of it obviously because, as you guys all know, I didn't grow up a Sharks fan. So, but I've been through similar things when I was a fan as a Kings fan, right? So I'm not, the emotion isn't lost on me. So I get it. I get not only losing a guy like Hurdle, but trading him to your rival.
It sucks.
Like I said, really brace yourself. There's a fair chance you will see Thomas Hurdle raise it. I'm going to say it again, not because I want to sting your ears, but because I want to bring that reality to you, that there's a good chance that you're going to see Thomas Hurdle wearing Golden Knights jersey, raising a Stanley Cup. There's a decent chance of that, right? Mm-hmm. But the value that they got as a hockey move, this was a good hockey move. And again, the retention, we talked a lot about, mm-hmm. is not that bad really. Right. If you look at it on a per year basis, the third round picks, like I mentioned, not that big a deal. Yeah. And especially the 2027 one. Right. And look, so this is one of those things where
an unprotected first.
Right. And you never know. Right. And so I brought this up a lot because
Penguins are way worse than people thought they were going to be this year. Are going to be way.
Sorry, Erik Karlsson for throwing you under the bus continually. Yeah. But 2018, when the Sharks trade for Erik Karlsson, right?
No one thought
that 2020 first round pick. Everyone was like, "Oh, it's fine, no problem." Like at worst, it's going to be like a low 20s, 25, 30, right? No problem. We just got the best defenseman in the world. No problem, right?
Yep.
And of course, look what happened, right? And that pick ends
especially
up
for a
unprotected,
cap-trapped team with a bunch of veterans like the Golden Knights are.
You really don't know what will happen with teams, right? Obviously, you mentioned Pittsburgh, right? And I think everybody had them in the playoffs at least, right? No one predicted what the state that they're in now. And so you just never know with veteran teams. Even the Sharks 2019-20. Yeah, they lost Joe Pavelski. But hey, we still have Erik Karlsson. Joe Thornton's still pretty good. He still was a good player the year before. Well, so players get old, all kinds of stuff happen, right? Players come off injury like Karlsson did back then, right? And yep. So you really just never know. And so it is a value that that Mike Grier got that 2025 pick unprotected. Yes, likely it's going to be a late pick, but you really never know. I mean, you never know. That's why Kyle Dubas, as desperate as he was, made sure that the 2024 pick he gave to the Sharks was at least top 10 protected, right? Because you never know, right? And I think maybe that Wilson trade, I don't know if that, I'm sorry, the Karlsson trade 2018 made by Doug Wilson, maybe that was a little bit of a lesson, right, to the other organizations in the league that you better at least protect that, just because you never know. And anyway, so I'm not done with this. I've been really busy today, so I haven't kind of pulled the coat of every source possible to ask, right? But I asked, I would say, a half dozen of the sources that some of my closer sources, right? One source that famously last year was a source that said of the Timo Meier trade, and I know some of you guys remember this, said that that the Sharks got nobody back who's going to score 10 goals in a season.
And then Sutterland has more goals.
Right. Yeah. So this person is not predisposed to liking what the Sharks did, right? Or what the Sharks do. And while he also didn't love the retention and the third round picks, no one does, right? The foundation of the deal, though, Edstrom 2025 pick, he's like, yeah, that's a good foundation. And that's, in his estimation, would have been a foundation of a 2022 deal for Hurdle too. Yeah. And so I went with sort of the people, a lot of the people that I trust the most, and five people all said it was good. They did well to trade Hurdle while the going was good. Now, some people may have thought it was a great deal. Some people was like, oh, it's good. They don't like some of the side things like we talked about, right? The picks and the retention, but they all thought everyone sees Edstrom and a first round pick, unprotected first round pick. And so everyone's like, yeah, that's a good deal. It's good for Hurdle. It's good for the Sharks. One source thought that maybe the Sharks could do better for a player of Hurdle's caliber, but I personally have a lot of doubts about that, but considering, and we didn't get into it because, I think we all know, right, that Hurdle's deal, Hurdle himself has so much risk. And I guess we alluded to his knee injuries, right? But just, you just don't know. And And so the Sharks headed off that risk with this deal too, which I think is just I think they did a really good job with this trade. I mean, I thought it was an amazing trade at first when you know Darren Drager reported initially that the Sharks like got the third round picks, but I think it's still a very good trade though, and it's again basically Mike Greer restarted the rebuild trade deadline 2022, which is what the organization should have done. And so, you know, he basically went back in time and took over as GM into 2022 and said, oh, nope, we're not re-signing this guy. And, you know, I told you guys all along, right, that I don't believe that Greer would have re-signed a Hurdle if he was in the seat then. And I think this basically proves it. So. Yeah.
He would have basically made this trade, but gotten a little bit better.
Yeah, a little better. Maybe a decent. You know, maybe he would have got the third round picks in return, or another like kind of like C level prospect, right? Like we'll talk about him soon. Like a Jack Thompson in addition to the deal, or something good, right? But again, the core of it and all of it depends on execution.
And the Sharks are this. My biggest part is the Sharks are free. Like they're it. We worried so long about what are the Sharks going to do to get out of all of these contracts.
And about $3 million tied into Carlson and Hurdle. I don't really count Burns because that one's going to go pretty soon. And I mean, even look at this, right? Look at this way
Jones's
too.
Jones's buyout decreases next year too, right? So it's
The Burns deal, I can still defend it because Burns specifically wanted to go to Carolina, and it doesn't sound like looking back then, there just wasn't a lot of good offers out there. Right. I have talked to people since then though. One scout guy that I trust told me, I still think that they should have just held on to him in season for a little longer. It's just some desperation could sink in. And so they can get a little more, even if you send them to the place that you want to go to. Right. So that being the case. Right. And anyway, we can agree that, whatever Mike's intentions with the Burns trade, that the return was light. The return was light back then, and it looks even lighter now with Eto Makaniemi and his situation, his injury situation, right? And it's the third round pick and Stephen Lawrence. Well, I guess you can that turn into the Duclair trade, right? But still, that's a light return for Brent Burns. This is not a light return for Tomas Hertl. You got two first round picks. No matter how you slice it, you got two first round picks, and like I said, unlike the Carlson deal, which I questioned because I wondered about the retention there, right, for four more years, right? I do understand you don't want to retain too, but you don't want to retain 50% on six more years. You know, at some point you want to start winning games, right? And so low retention amount, gave up some decent picks and third rounders, but not premium picks, right? I mean, Luke Cunningham won for a third round pick. So, like, that's you know what they thought a good Luke Cunningham went for a third round pick, right? Yeah. And so it's you look at the core of this deal and you don't like some of the side stuff, but the core of this deal, I think it's outstanding. I don't think the Sharks could have had it better if they played out the string with Hurdle and just kind of waited maybe until this off season. I don't know if there's a better deal out there, because again, it takes, just like with Carlson, right, it took a very motivated team to pony up a premium asset for a great player, but on an awful contract, right? And Hurdle's contract, not as awful as Carlson's, but still not a good contract considering age and all that risk associated, right? So
here we are. And I emotionally, I hate it. Logically, it makes a lot of sense.
It's a good hockey trade, I think.
It's a good,
I mean, considering the cap. Yeah, and all that stuff.
The Golden Knights made it hurt a little bit. That's all I would say, is that they made it hurt a little bit to make it not perfect for the Sharks, but I think they got the most they could at this point for Tomas Hertl. It just triggers again that this is it. Like, we are going to be the worst team in the NHL for this year and next year.
All right, Macklinsell is and Hagens up the middle.
And Hagens, it's Bellarini.
Hagens is the center, right? Actually, I don't look too far ahead on drafts because
we're
going to be the worst team on the ice in front of me. So
the worst team in the NHL for the next 2 years. And that's something, I guess. And it needed to happen 2 years ago.
To happen though.
So I don't know, to everybody, all the Sharks fans, yes, there are aspects of this deal that are not perfect, but if you waited long for the perfect deal for Tomas Hertl, Erik Karlsson, Brent Burns, and Timo Meier, they're going to pass you by, and you'll end up with Alexander Barabanov, who doesn't get a deal done. Like,
yeah,
you have to do the deal. You have to strike when the iron's hot. You have to do the deal when it's there, and the deal was there, and it's worth it.
I had to go back a little bit on what I said about the Timo Meier trade, right? Because I thought that maybe the Sharks should hold and maybe get a desperate team, but
in the end of the day, they made pretty well in that trade.
It looks like they did pretty well in that trade, right? And so, yeah. You know, my only bone of contention was Karlsson was I do still think they should have retained more and gotten more from the Penguins, but that's Hassel's money. That's not my money.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, if you look at, again, the Burns trade, not ideal because the return was light, still is light, but just, you can't say that about this, even with Karlsson, right? Which of course that the first round pick was really more for taking on the bad contracts. Right. But nonetheless, though, you got a first round pick though. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I think I don't want to blow, you know, too much smoke up Mike Greer's ass, you know.
Yeah, it's all, I don't want to be too much of an apologist.
It's you know, if they fail with their draft picks, then Mike Greer's gonna get canned in a few years. But they've set themselves up with the sort of the appropriate amount of, you know, just the number of picks that you need to start really seriously be in a rebuild, right? Multiple first rounders, all that kind of stuff, right? They're setting themselves up for that. So if they hit on their picks, then this team's going to be powerhouse. If they don't hit on their picks, then yeah, it could be I heard the phrase the affinity build, right? Which was, I think the Edmonton Oilers before they got Connor McDavid, when they kept getting number one picks, but, you know, drafting guys like Nugent Hopkins and Hall and Yakupov and
Eberle,
anyway,
and all that stuff.
Yeah,
was Eberle first? Yeah.
No, I don't think he was the first, but he was, I think he was a top five. So the affinity build. And actually, the Oilers did actually draft pretty well, actually, in a lot of ways. But anyway, though, the point is that it does come down to execution. So the job is like half done at that, right? Half the job is getting the picks for your scouting staff, and the other half is the scouting and the development too. And so we'll see.
In some ways, I think the 2023 draft, which is really like Mike Greer's like first total draft, there's been so many successes. I mean, these are not,
it's too early though. I don't want to be, it's like as of this time, last year this time we were raving about Philippe Bisted and how the Sharks fleeced, they went back, they got Bisted, they went back in the draft, training 11th pick, and they got Bisted and Lund and Havlid. Bisted, obviously,
all we have to do
regress, so, but yeah,
I know. Okay. Well, I'm going to finish my sentence. So all we have to do is judge on the play that's been done. And the play that's been done has Quentin Musty leading the OHL in points per game and Will Smith leading the NCAA in points. So that's all we have to go on. And it's success. Whether or not that translates, who knows? But
yeah,
the point is if Will Smith was putting up 0.5 points per game and Quentin Musty was 0.75 points per game in the OHL, we'd be like, the fuck is Greer doing? why are we paying attention to this guy who has no idea what he's doing? But
yeah,
and he picks up Luca Cagnoni in the fourth round. Like, there's some method to this that I think we have to kind of trust. And we, in some ways, trusted a little too much, I think, with Doug Wilson Jr.'s drafting.
Well, and Doug too, because they had so much success for so long. You just thought, you guys know what they're doing. They've shown they know what they're doing.
They got a Hertl and Couture, and they got like so many good dudes for so long, and Meyer and LeBanc even, like so many good prospects. And you know, even before that with Pavelski and Braun, and they were a very good drafting team that we just trusted them to lead this new age of the NHL and the Sharks. And it was faulty. I'll say that. And we were wrong. And hopefully Greer understands what the next age of the NHL and the Sharks are going to be. And I think we just have to give a little bit of faith for a little while. And Greer is still young at this. And I think a lot of ways pundits and media people are a little unfair to Greer in terms of how long he's had to do this job, and a very extremely difficult job.
Sure.
Like really, really friggin', I don't know how to describe how horrible it is to get out of these contracts, but it's hard.
I would think it's one of the hardest jobs, GM jobs for somebody to take over in recent league history, I would think, with the amount of bad contracts, right? Not just a couple, but like a half dozen or so. Well, you know, they started to pull it away a couple of years or a year or so before Greer with like Martin Jones and stuff. But anyway, I just wanted to close too, just with the thought that, and you and I agree with this, that I think there's some like national question of, oh, what is Mike Greer's plan, et cetera, et cetera. I get that too from my sources I trust too, that they're not sure about this or that, right? But I think we've always maintained on a podcast that I think we see the plan, just a matter of execution, but the plan is good, and this is part of the plan. This sticks with the plan.
Yeah, I mean, what are we going to do with a 33-year-old Tomas Hertl? I don't know. Or like a 34-year-old Tomas Hertl.
Kiss babies.
Kiss babies, I guess, and wave a lot. And same thing with Couture and Vlasic. I love them. Great Sharks veterans for a very long time. They're not part of the future team that's going to win a Stanley Cup. And Hertl, if you love Hertl, you want to see him win a Stanley Cup, good. If you think that this was a good trade for the Sharks because Hertl's going to get worse, good. It does. Either way, you win. So be happy. He either wins the Stanley Cup with the Vegas Golden Knights being an awesome player, or he doesn't and we traded him at the right time. So you win. That's all you should say is we win. We get a first and David Edstrom. So that's it. That's my spiel. We've talked like 45 minutes about Hertl.
Well, it's the trade of the day, right? So
it really is.
I guarantee that we won't talk 45 minutes about Devin Cooley. So
I might. No, I won't.
No, he's not related to Logan. So yeah, no.
The Duclair one, or the Duclair trade, was the trade that I thought was going to be the big trade of the day. Yeah. I was like, all right, this is it. We get a third in Jack Thompson. Cool. And I was kind of underwhelmed at the beginning. Not that I think it's actually, to be honest, a very, I don't know, very good trade. Like,
I think it's a terrific trade.
It's a terrific trade.
I think it's probably better than a Hertl trade in some ways.
They targeted an area of need. Just the
value you got back, yeah.
Yeah, they targeted an area of need. They got the value that Duclair was worth. There was no retention. It was just like simple, we have a guy that's hot. Do you want him to try and help win? We want one of your best prospects and a third round pick. And it was simple. I liked it.
With the prospect, he's highly rated in the Tampa system, but the Tampa doesn't have a great system. It's so
bad.
Yeah. So people I talk to, they do think he is a good prospect, but he probably ends up being more of a, if he pans out as a bottom pairing guy, but a very good bottom pairing guy. And so if he does, that's still a very useful player. And so, that's a good trade for a guy like Duclair, who I know, near the end there was started scoring a lot, but I've talked a lot about it. Duclair's game is a pretty simple. He is fast. He can finish, but then there's not much else there, right? And we talk about sort of the leadership aspect there too, where he's good in the locker room. He's been sort of a mentor for the younger players, and that is an important thing for sure. But like with Hertl has been a leader too, that if you can get good value for these guys, though, who their ages don't fit your timeline, even if they are good leaders, you really have to think about it. You have to consider it, right? Whereas I think with guys like, and they still have good leaders in the room, good influences, right? Like Ranlin, like Cunning, like Sturm, like Ferraro, right? I don't think the deals were quality enough for Greer to be like, okay, I'm going to lose this bit of leadership this year to trade you Mikael Granlund. Next year might be a different story. But so you lose that with a Duclair, you lose that in a Hertl, but it's sort of the trade-off, right? To kind of move your franchise forward. You can't keep late 20s, early 30s players when you can get good stuff back just because they're good in a room too. I know it's a balance. Yeah, I talk about you can't, I talk a lot about you need guys who can set good examples for your players. That's really important. You need guys for like an Eklund to play with too, right? And so that's going to be something that he's going to suffer from over the last 20 games here. But there's a balance there though too. Like if someone's waving two first rounders for you for Hurdle, if someone's waving, you know, Duclair was a pending UFA, there's no guarantee that he would have come back, right? And of course, like for a guy like that, whose game is, like I said, it's good, but it's limited. You don't want to overspend on a guy like that in terms of years, in terms of money too. And so if someone's willing to give you a decent pick in a third rounder, one this year, and a pretty good prospect, third in the prospect for Duclair, if you had suggested that before he went on his hot streak, I think every fan would have been quite pleased with that. And so yeah, I think
no problem.
I have no problem with this. I think like I'm gonna say this flat out. Like I think Mike had an excellent trade deadline here. I know that a lot of fans, because how much they love Hurdle, I get that, are going to hate Mike Greer forever. But if I think the plan is good, if the execution works out, you're gonna love Mike Greer in 5 years.
That's a good way to say that. Almost everybody said he's going to get a third. We got a third and an actual NHL prospect,
right?
Not like a third plus a 24-year-old who's like maybe an AHLer.
The most optimistic projections, right? We talked to a team 33. I talked to this gal too, said second rounder maybe. And I'm not sure if, Thompson probably was like a fourth round pick prospect. So a third and a fourth, is that equivalent of second rounder? I don't know, right? So, sure. But yeah, it's a good deal. You get that third that you kind of expected, plus a legit prospect back.
Yeah, and I think if the Sharks want him back, they can sign him in the offseason if he wants to come back to the San Jose Sharks. I have no problem with the
deal. Yeah, A plus, no notes.
No notes. I'd say A, no notes. A plus would be if you got like second plus Thompson. Then A plus. A, no notes.
Thomas Hurdle, some notes. Some need some cliff notes, need some explanation. Okay, but
a couple things that are kind of sketchy, but not terrible.
Yeah, right.
But Duclair, it's like, this is what we wanted. We wanted to up his value. It's a pump his value and then trade him.
I think the Sharks made one more deal that's even better than Duclair trade in some ways, but we'll get to that.
Ooh, okay. And I have no notes on I have no notes on Duclair. Our other UFA, who I honestly was like, I can't believe we haven't traded him yet, based on the previous night where Magnus Crona was shelled for seven goals. And I thought after the fifth goal that maybe he should be pulled because he was having a really rough night. And you can kind of tell when a goaltender is not feeling it, and Magnus Crona was not feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought he was going to get pulled and they didn't. I was like, this is weird. There's something strange happening here in Mike Greer or David Quinn's head about pulling him. Because in a normal night in November, Magnus Crona gets pulled. Why is Crona not getting pulled now? So I was very worried after 3 p.m. struck that there was going to be no Kapanen deal. And I was surprised that one happened afterwards. I think a lot of fans are actually upset about this trade. And I like it, which is weird.
I guess we've termed guys. I just want to announce a new sponsorship. The San Jose Sharks are sponsoring us. We are now the
Mike Greer Apologist Podcast.
We are the MGAs, the Mike Greer Apologists.
We're not. I really like it.
I can't say I really like it, but I understand it though. I don't think it's terrible though. And let me explain. Now let's first talk about why people think it is bad, right? Yeah. Okay, so first, Vanacek has had a terrible season. He's been one of the flat-out worst goalies in the league. Number two, Vic is hurt, and he's probably done for the season. And so you traded a healthy goalie who's had a pretty good season until the last couple of weeks for a hurt goalie who's been awful this year. Okay, so I get all that, right? Okay, so here's my rebuttal, and then I'm sure you have your thoughts on it too. Vanacek from 2020 to 2023. From 2020 to 2023, in terms of goals saved above expected, he was smack dab in the middle for guys that played, you know, kind of a certain number of a lot of minutes, right? Sure. He was like 20th of 40. Of 40 goalies. He had like a plus 197. Not significant, right? It's no Sorokin, right? But pretty average, right? For a starter, right? Kakinen in the same period of time was 41st out of 43 goalies. Going into this season, Kakinen was, the last 3 years, Kakinen had been on the aggregate one of the worst starters in the league. Actually, right ahead of Kakinen, there was a Blackwood. But Blackwood, of course, had a lot of injuries, so he has sort of that excuse there. Obviously, this season it's kind of flipped for Vanecek. Vanecek, his goal, his GSAX this year is, I think, second worst in the league. I think maybe only Mers Leakins has been worse in that department. Kakinen, before the last 2 weeks, where he's been actually legitimately bad, he was average. After the last 2 weeks, he's now like a bottom 25 percentile goalie in terms of goals saved above expected, right? Maybe he'll bounce back from that. Maybe he won't. But anyway, the point, though, is that the Sharks basically traded for a guy that's been historically better than Kakinen, who is about the same age. Vanecek is 28, Kakinen's 27, and Vanecek is fully expected to be healthy next year. And then the most important bit, too, Vanecek is signed for next year. Vanecek is signed for $3.4 million, one more year, $3.4 million, right? And, of course, Kakinen was about to be a UFA. And so there's a couple things with Kakinen being UFA. First, did the Sharks really want to keep him, right? And it kind of seemed like they weren't that into it because I don't think they made an offer to him this season, even when he was playing well, right? They didn't really sound like there's much sort of movement there, right? And then also, too, if you just say like, okay, hey, you know what? We're stuck with Kakinen, let's just re-sign him. Okay, that's fine. Key and Block would get along. Kakinen has been good this year, right? But do you want to give him a multi-year? Is he going to accept that? He's a UFA too, so it's not like he's an RFA. It's not like he's under your control, right? So you could be stuck with no goalie next to Blackwood if Kakinen gets a better deal. If you go to Kapo and you're like, hey, you know, we're not really sure about you and Blackwood. Do you mind, you know, kind of doing another 1 year thing with us and you and Blackwood together, right? Maybe he says yes. Maybe you find the right dollar figure, right? Which probably wouldn't have been much higher than Vanecek's 3.4. Probably been a little under, right? But maybe another team goes to Kakinen and says, "Hey, we'll give you 2 years." I mean, I think that's feasible, right? That's not out of the realm of possibility, right? And so at that point, then, do you want to match that? Do you want Kakinen for two more years? I don't know. Maybe you do, maybe you don't. But in Vanecek, you have a guy that, again, you have cost certainty for next year at about the same rate that you would have paid Kakinen next year, but it's only for one more year. So you can, again, kind of figure out who is going to be your immediate Sharks goalie of the future, Blackwood, or now it's Vanecek, right? And if Vanecek is really good next year, which, again, in recent history has shown the history of doing that, then you can the pick that you thought you were going to get for Kakinen this year, that third rounder that didn't materialize, maybe you'll get it for Vanecek. And Mike Greer did say this very clearly, that sort of the goalie market evaporated. I think basically after the Jake Allen trade, that there might have been teams that wanted a goalie like Colorado, right? But, you know, in terms of cap, there's reasons why it couldn't work, right? And obviously the Sharks lost their retention slot with the Hurdle trade, right? And so that could have been a deal that was affected by that. But anyway, and I actually asked Mike this directly, and he was honest about it, right? Usually you don't phrase things like this way to a GM, and you don't get an honest answer. But I said, so basically you're kind of punting the decision on your goal thing until next year. That's literally what I asked Mike. Mike said, yeah, that's basically what I'm doing. So I'm not as like high on a deal as you are. I don't think it was an outstanding deal, but I think it's a sensible deal. And so it's fine. If you don't think Kakinen is the guy, and Kapo's got a lot of talent, but track record, right, before this year doesn't add up well, and he doesn't have an injury sort of excuse like Blackwood has, right? If you don't think Kakinen is your guy for next year or two, then this makes sense.
Yeah, here's why I'm high on the deal. Mm-hmm. And I think NHL GMs have to kind of put themselves in a position of like, yes or no's, or like do or do nots, right? Mm-hmm. So if Vanecek becomes a very good starting goaltender for the Sharks, is he worth more than Kaapo Kähkönen? I'd say yes.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, based on, again, the track record, right?
The track record, right? Yeah. Like, people have traded, Washington traded a second to get Kapanen, mm-hmm. or Vanecek back from the expansion draft from Seattle. He was a good goaltender for a good team in New Jersey. If he's a good goaltender,
he's played
next
playoff
year,
games, right?
Exactly. He's been in the playoffs. He's around the same age as Kähkönen. So I think he's worth more. He's worth like probably a second. Who knows? It
at
depends
best,
on how good
yeah.
he is. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I wanted to add too that
if he doesn't do well, he's also just a very bad goaltender for a team that's supposed to be horrible next year. So who cares? Like, I mean, you need a goaltender and you need, it's all just, like you said, it's punting the decision and taking risks, but like calculated risks. Like Kähkönen probably could have got us a third or fourth or whatever. You're trying to get better than that, or trying to be, you know, have goaltending. But if it's sure. terrible, we're terrible. It's what we're expected to be next year.
And of course, you never know, right? Kähkönen's still young. He's talented, right? He could go full Aiden sure. Hill on the Sharks, right? That'll be maybe. Hilarious, right? But
another time.
But yeah, if you remember when we were talking about Kähkönen up to this point, right? The whole bit about Kähkönen was, yeah, he's having a good season for a bad team. That's great, but he's never done this, like been a starter for a playoff team. We have no idea yep. how he can handle that. You know, he wasn't seen as a starter, right? And whereas Vanecek hasn't been incredible, but last year in New Jersey, Vanecek plays 52 games. Even a year before in Washington, Vanecek plays 42 games, half the schedule, right? I don't think Kähkönen has reached either of those. And also, Vanecek has played playoff games. Wasn't great in them, but hey, he's played them at least, right? And so Kähkönen, I don't know if Kähkönen's even surpassed half a season yet mm-hmm. in terms of a number of games that he's played. And so it's sort of trading a guy that also too, right, to your point of kind of ceiling, right? A guy, Vanecek, his ceiling right now is a 1A. Kähkönen is not far, but Kähkönen is more of like a 1B, right? Until Kähkönen shows us something different, more of a 1B. And so in a lot of ways, in that sense, yeah, I definitely get what you're saying. I mean, there are the other risks, obviously, in terms of just Vanecek's injury, right? You know, they tell us he's going to be healthy. Obviously, who knows, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I definitely get what you're saying. And yes, Kähkönen's high for a season is 37 last year. So
yeah, so I. And who knows? Like, and also the third option of that is that Vanecek becomes like so good that you don't trade him, but you re-sign him.
Yeah.
And
even if you're asking now, who's more likely for that to happen? These are all calculated risk, right? Just like the Aiden Hill trade. But yeah. If you're to ask me right now, who is most likely to be the kind of the Sharks kind of clear cut number one between Blackwood, Vanecek, and Kähkönen? I got to think about Blackwood versus Vanecek, but mm-hmm. those two would be ahead of Kähkönen in terms of just the likelihood. You know, Kähkönen might be like a 20% chance at it, right? Whereas Blackwood and Vanecek might be 40% each, right? But yeah, I would definitely more likely think that one of those two guys, based on their past track record and talent and sort of just what people say about them, right? Scouts, that it would be either of those two ahead of Kähkönen.
So was your favorite deal not the Kähkönen for Vanecek?
No, it's the Schimmick deal.
Tell me about the Schimmick deal. Why do you love the Schimmick deal so much? I thought it was good. It's kind of out of nowhere. We both thought like, oh, Radim Šimić not going to get traded to the deadline.
Well, yeah, who would have thought that, right? But look,
here he is.
The way I see it is not obviously not in terms of the quality of the asset. The best thing the Sharks got in a trade deadline is either Edstrom or the 2025 pick, right? There's no question about that part of it, right? Mm-hmm. But it's about the pure upside of this trade. You have a guy like like Šimek, that's not in the NHL, right? He's been with the Barracuda all season. He's also 31. He's going to be a UFA. He has no future in your organization unless, I don't know, he's the captain of your team.
Sure.
Captain of your Barracuda team, I mean, right? If he continues at that, right? And even as good a job as he's done at that, right? Again, his age, all those kind of things, right? He's a guy that, again, has no future with your team. He's going the wrong way in his career for sure, right?
Yep.
And you traded him for a guy in Klim Kostin. And the cost really is, you know, pun intended, the cost really is taking that $2 million cap hit. He had a two-year deal, right, with the Red Wings. He has one more year after this year.
One more.
So you're taking that cap hit from – you're basically saving the Red Wings $2 million. And then, meanwhile, though, you're taking a chance on a guy who's 24. He is one of those bullshit first round picks. Whereas, like, if you put him in a deal right now, you're like, oh yeah, he's a first rounder. No, he was a first rounder in 2017. Obviously, his star has fallen quite a bit from that. But as recently as a couple of years ago with the Oilers, 2022-23, he had a very good season with them. It's sort of a secondary kind of a role, right? And so he's still young, and he's a guy I talk with people, right? The favorite thing I've heard about him, that consistent theme, is he's good if he wants to be.
Good if he wants to be. I like it.
And that doesn't sound great in terms of like, okay, I don't know if this guy is going to really be a future part of the Sharks, right? But what everyone agrees on is that the overall talent is there with him for him to be a viable NHL player. It's about sort of unlocking the motivation and getting that consistent, all that kind of stuff, right? Which is hard, obviously. It's not I'm not saying that's routine or easy, right? But the upside of that, right, even though the upside is probably limited, obviously, it's not like he's going to turn around and be Timo Meier or something like that, right?
Sure.
Like if he's Fabian Zetterlund, I think you're thrilled, right? But the upside of that isn't really high. But again, for the cost, though, for Šimek, and yeah, you sent the seventh round pick to them too. For I mean, this in terms of like what you gave up, and the upside you get back, this is the best Sharks deal for sure. Hurdle, obviously, you lost an incredible player on the ice who's going to help your young players like Eklund, etc. Also, incredible ambassador for your team on and off the ice, right? In Hurdle, so you lost some really a lot there. There's no question about it. Got a lot back, but you lost a lot, right? Duclair, not the impact of a Hurdle, but Duclair still a good NHL player, as we can see. Was popular among his teammates, right? Took the time to mentor guys like a Bordalo, a Eklund, a Zetterlund, right? So all important things, right? For this group. And Šimek didn't want to take it away from him. I've heard nothing but great stories about how he's impacted players at the Barracuda level, right? But this is just all upside, though. There's just like, if Kostin's no good, it's just $2 million of Hossel's money gone. And if Hossel becomes half of the player, or I mean, if Kostin can't go back to what he was doing for the Oilers, then suddenly you've got a viable player. That then you can decide what to do with him the year after that. Maybe you flip him for a draft pick. Maybe you re-sign him and he's part of your future. Kind of like a Zadina, right? Where he's young enough to be part of it. Also, he's a guy that speaks to what you said last time at the last podcast about the kind of players that the Sharks
Mike Drew loves these guys, right?
This is exactly what they should be doing, because they have a lot of cap space, they have a lot of roster space, they have a lot of lines and jobs up for grabs, right? So you can use this to kind of try to figure out guys that that could be a part of your future. Of course, you got to keep the culture good, and you know, all the room has to be good. Yet they had to be good influences on Eklund and all those kind of guys, right? So that's another part of it. We can't forget that. But yeah, like a guy. Guy like a Kostin, a fallen star, but again, as recently as 2 years ago with the Oilers, was doing some really good things for a playoff team too, for a really good team there. That if you can get him back to that, then this is again the perfect kind of this is as buy low as possible. This basically as buy low as possible as the Sharks could have traded to get somebody of a reasonable upside.
Yeah. What you hope from the Sharks is that they're not going to spend like $2 million on a 38-year-old, right?
Well, and they haven't done anything like that, right?
I know. That's what I'm saying. Like he's buying low on guys that maybe in the future, it's all chances, right? You have these limited amount of assets essentially for an NHL franchise, and you try and take the amount of chances that you can to improve the odds that those are better players in the future. And it's I think it's fine. Like Radim Šimek in a seventh are not going anywhere.
You guys might have seen this by the time you listen to this. I did a grades for NBC on the trade. Mm-hmm. I'm probably repeating a lot of what I wrote in the article here, but I gave two trades an A. What do you think? Yeah. What are two trades I gave an A?
Well, I guess this one and man, that's tough to say. I honestly would go with like Carolina, but
no, of the Sharks deals.
The Sharks deals. Yeah,
yeah.
Oh,
that was the only ones that graded. I don't care about the other teams in the league.
Anthony Duclair, probably.
Yep. Because that's almost all upside too. Because pending UFA, you know, maybe you were going to sign him, maybe you weren't. He can walk, right? Anyway, if he really wants to come back, you can sign him anyway and still come out of it with an extra third round pick and an extra prospect in Jack Thompson. And so that's all upside, right?
Straight upside, for sure.
And so I gave the Hurdle a B. I gave, because I had to give something a C, I gave the Kakinen a C+, because I get it, but, you know, Vanek has to be healthy and be good.
A lot of ifs,
right? And okay, so then the next deal. Anyway, let's kind of wrap up. Unless you have anything more to say about Redding,
It was fine. I think Kostin is exactly the player that Greer likes to target, and young enough that maybe he'll make an impact. And you never know. So I like it. And Šimek wasn't. He was a UFA and seventh.
No future. Yeah, so. with an organization, really. Yeah, except.
You're basically just paying for the upside to get $2 million off of Detroit's books. So I like it. Next is Ochotiuk, who was traded to Calgary for a conditional fifth, which is basically like...
It's basically going to be Chicago's fifth round pick, because I think Chicago has two fifth round picks, and it's the lowest or it's the highest or the best of the Chicago's 2024 fifth round picks. And we know, it's going to be Chicago's picks. So, exactly. Anyway, on this deal, I think it's a little bit of a surprise because obviously he came in a Timo Meier trade and they did talk him up quite a bit as sort of a sleeper guy in the trade, right? I heard at the end there that Philadelphia was in on it too. That's neither here nor there for the discussion. But anyway, though, I think with Ochotiuk, what they liked about him, he's physical, he's fairly mobile for his size. There's a lot of pluses in that regard, right? But man, his puck play was rough. His puck play was legitimately bad at this level. And he really should have been in the AHL, but because of his waiver situation, right, he had to go through waivers. And the Sharks were probably worried that they would lose him, right? And there was some interest in him, like you can see here with Calgary and Philadelphia. They're worried that they're going to lose him for nothing, that they kept him up the whole year. Honestly, I think at a little bit of a disservice to Ochotiuk. He should be down in AHL plying his trade and kind of working on getting those puck touches and being better at that. In addition, too, with Ochotiuk, too, I do wonder if he's a guy that handles the, this is something I've heard that basically like handles mistakes, you know, like kind of brush off mistakes well.
Sure.
And you need the attitude of handling, you need the attitude of being able to brush off mistakes when you play for this Sharks team. If you don't have that attitude, then you're going to be shell shocked for years and years. And people wonder why Henry Thurn keeps getting played, right? Henry Thurn has had a very rough last couple of weeks or so, right? But Thrun's makeup, though, from what I understand, talking with Henry myself, right? Like, you get a sense that, and maybe at some point he's going to break, of course, right? I mean, I even saw, I told you guys this, like, during the Sharks 0-10-1 streak, right? In the beginning of the season, I saw Nico Sturm break and start making plays. Like, what are you doing, Nico? You know, because I think he was at a certain point. And that's a guy that's like as much of like a machine, and I mean that in the most like complimentary way of anybody in the Sharks room. Sure. So Henry might have a breaking point, but definitely his tolerance and sort of his ability to brush off his mistakes and move on, right, is I think a lot higher than Nikita's. And so I think that's kind of a factor in all this too. Not a Henry Thrun versus a Ochotiuk comparison, but just that's something that is a reason why maybe they weren't as optimistic that Ohtio could turn it around, and why they let him go kind of while he still has some value for, just an okay pick.
Yeah, I never, not never believed in Nikita Ohtio. I just, I never got a handle on him, I think is a good way to put it. He was traded, and I never had a good viewing of him before he was in the NHL, and then NHL viewings of him I found kind of mixed, like good on good physicality at some points, decent defensively, and then really awful puck decisions and really I never saw like more than what he was, which is a depth defenseman. And to get, they got a fifth round pick for it. I think it's fine. If they're kind of got overloaded a little bit in the defensive end, even if Ohtik is young, he's going to be put on waivers at the beginning of next trade.
Probably, yeah.
Beginning of next training camp. So, yeah. I mean, maybe put on waivers by even, Calgary, who traded for him. So
right, next year, yeah, he might have. I think a guy like Thompson is ahead of him in the system in terms of just how he's regarded and stuff like that.
McLeodolin's ahead of him.
Far ahead of him, right? There's not even a question about that.
Exactly.
We're talking about guys immediately too. We're not talking about guys that are like far away, like a Cagnoni or whatever. We're talking about guys directly, like
that are going to jump him, and put him on waivers. It's Greer thinking ahead, basically, to the offseason, and I'm fine with it. I think it was a good trade.
Yeah, I think they liked the idea of a guy like that. Like they called him a throwback. That was the classic thing that they said about him when they traded for him. Sure. And they got a close look at him. They're like, hey,
Our last deal is Devin Cooley for a 2025 seventh? Is it was?
Yeah.
I think it was the same seventh that they got from the Vanacek and Kakinen deal, right?
Yeah. Well, this is the veteran goalie that the Barracuda probably needed
100%
at the beginning of the season. He's not quite as good as Aaron Dell or that, doesn't have any NHL experience, right? But he's a guy that's going to stabilize things. Also, too, with Blackwood out for however long Blackwood is out, that he's going to help. Just have somebody viable behind Krona, or maybe Cooley will get some starts. And so, yeah, it's a pretty kind of a blah trade, of course, right?
I 100%
that you kind of need to make, right?
So, I have 100% headcanon that I watched Greer last night watching Krona get shelled, and then he went, ah, shit, I'm going to take back in the next tomorrow.
And Blackwood's not coming back.
To get another goalie. And that's why he was like, all right, throw in a seventh so I can get Cooley. Like, I 100%, I saw his face and he was just Magnus Krona listened like the seventh goal. And Eric Greer was like, all right, fine, I'm going to get Devin Cooley.
Hey, who knows? Makaniemi, I think he backed up tonight. Is that what I read? I mean, I haven't been able to pay any attention to the Barracuda.
Yes, he did. He backed up tonight, and he was healthy enough to back up. I believe
he had mono. I think I mentioned that the last podcast. So it's good that he's back from that, right?
Yep.
And so it could be, Makaniemi is a guy that people do like his talent, just can't stay healthy. Maybe he can stay healthy for these last 20 games. Maybe he comes up and he backs up Krona or Blackwood. And so, by the way, though, you just need more depth in the system, right? Because you weren't going to call up Romanov and Krona. I know we're trying to tank, but let's not be so obvious, guys.
He was like, I can't do this to Krona. I need to get somebody that's going to play goalie. After I trade Kakinen, I 100% think that's what happened. Maybe he always had this idea, but I think it was a smart move.
I do think that, again, I go back to this. I've said this before. That's the idea they should have had at the beginning of the season and not thrown three young goalies to the Wolves or the Barracuda. But anyway, that's neither here nor there, though. So,
yeah, it was not a successful run of goaltending for them, and honestly the Sharks are, maybe we'll talk about this in another episode, but
yeah,
we're still missing like a goaltending pipeline of sorts.
Oh sure, they have nobody in the system. I mean,
that's young and like promising,
like really young, right? Because we all expected them to draft a goalie last year, and I know they like some guys. I think they like Guyan, but they, you know, those guys all went before maybe the Sharks thought that, yep, that they should go. And so they didn't get any of those guys. And so, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
they don't really have a goalie of the future at all.
No. Yeah. Because Bopit is in the, Bopit's playing like the BCHL, I think. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, Gaudreau, they obviously let Gaudreau walk. And Gaudreau hasn't had like an exceptional season in his overage season. Right. So,
yeah.
So yeah,
anyway, I'll have to find out answer for that solution at some point, but I guess that's the point has come up later. But
yeah,
I think this trade was fine. Except for their pick that they got from the other trade, don't really care. And interesting story, at least for Devin Cooley.
Yeah, so, Los Gatos native. Yeah.
Yeah. So I like it. I'm gonna give the overall San Jose Sharks trade deadline a B. Solid B.
I'm gonna give it an A. Even though the hurdle I rated more as a B, because I mean, you always, anytime a trade that big, you do think about what could it, like, maybe it could get a little bit more because Thomas Hurdle is so good, right? And all that stuff.
Yeah.
Right? But along with the kind of the deals I really liked with Šimek and Duclair and the Vanacek Kakinen, I understood at least, right?
True.
Maybe A minus, but I usually don't rate things the Sharks do that highly, but I really like I mentioned, like I feel like I have a reasonable understanding of the direction that they've been in for a while, but I really like the sort of the commitment to it today and what they got in return too. So I thought, and I this might go contrary because I have hardly looked at Twitter, but the few things I've seen, people are very, very upset. And I understand, again, because it's Tomas Hertl, but I'm not a fan. So on a pure hockey side, though, I think that Mike had a very, very good trade deadline. It doesn't even matter how the picks turn out, because that's all going to be hindsight, right? But it's more about sort of just like at this time right now, were these the right moves to make for each and every one of these players? I would say so, yeah. The only one that's even debatable, there's some debate on Hurdle, some debate on Kakinen, but actually I don't think there's much debate on Hurdle. You get two first round picks for a guy that, yeah, so I don't think there's, in my mind, there's another debate on Hurdle. So Kakinen's the only one where, okay, yeah, maybe you should have re-signed him. He's a good guy, he gets along well with Blackwood, all that kind of stuff, right? But anyway, besides that though, like every move was the player that they should have, you know, it's a player they should have traded, and they got back a reasonable return, except for Kakinen, which I excuse him for, because Kakinen was not the top of the market goalie, right? He was no Markstrom, who didn't get traded, but he was not Allen either, who was sort of the top of the market in terms of the 1A, 1B types, right? So,
and it was a weird goalie market. They mentioned that multiple times. So
yeah.
I'm not going to blame it on Mike Greer. I'm becoming quickly a Mike Greer apologist, and
the MGAs.
And I didn't start off negative on Mike Greer, but I think I think everybody clamored for a rebuild for so long.
Yeah.
And this is it.
This is the rebuild.
This is it. It sucks. We're going to be bad.
The next pick, the next step is drafting the right guys, which we have no idea. Right. But like, the right moves to accrue more picks, they've been made.
Yep. And to be worse. And we're going to be very, very bad.
And the prospects acquired, at least at the moment, they appear like they've been good acquisitions, right? So
I honestly think that Mike Greer wants to finish last in the standings this year, because we have traded away our goaltending depth, our scoring depth, our best center. We have nothing in terms of.
Well, like, I think he wanted it last year too, but Erik Karlsson had to get in the fucking way and score 100 points.
Yeah. So, and now he's like, I need the BU kid. Like, if I don't get the BU kid, I don't know what to do.
Yeah. So. But this year, though, obviously Couture is out. Hurdle gets hurt. Granlund's hurt at the beginning of the season. I mean, just like, what's the point at a certain point, right? So,
It's a cacophony of like terribleness.
Yeah. So
I think I'm using, I don't actually know what the word cacophony means. And I also used the word diatribe wrong earlier.
Cacophony is, I think, a bunch
it's
of
like a mix,
discordant,
right?
Yeah, like a noise that is, but noise that doesn't blend well together. It's like discordant noise. So
it's like a cacophony of errors, I guess. For the
yeah, shows. Yeah, it's yeah, which I would say you can argue, you can say was the end of the Wilson era.
Yeah,
and
I didn't want to say a diatribe on the Thomas Hurdle thing. I wanted to say like a
monologue. Diatribe is angrier. Yeah,
angrier. So. Exactly. I'm not angry. I think it's fine. Anyway, I'm happy, even though I'm a little sad. That's the best way to put this. I'm happy but sad. And Shang, you gotta go home and sleep.
No, I gotta keep writing. So
keep writing.
I got a couple
writing till like 3 a.m, you guys.
Yeah, hopefully not, because yeah, the games are early games, so it won't be till 3 a.m. But but anyway, though, yeah, but it's been a really long day, though, for sure. Yeah, so I am near the end of
sure.
This call. We got to also put this puppy to bed to get this out there too. So
yeah, well, I got to go. We'll edit this podcast, yep. Release it, and then anyway, I hope everybody's doing okay with this news. It's rough, and I don't think there's going to be another one that's going to hurt as bad as this. Like. Couture's slow lingering injury hurts a lot, but I don't know if there's going to be another one that hurts.
No, there won't be. This was the worst one of them.
This is it.
All. I mean, even the Burns one doesn't
feel like this
because Burns was not in his prime anymore. Yeah. And you know, Hurdle still was close enough to it. I mean, yeah, Meyer, I think never as good as Meyer was, he never kind of achieved like the stardom, right? At least among the fan base, right? That Hurdle did. I mean, the only one that's worse is Pavelski walking, I guess, right? And so that's the one that.
And we didn't even know that was bad until afterwards.
Didn't know for sure. Yeah. Some people thought so, I guess. Yeah, for sure. I don't want to take quick credit that of the people that were talked about emphasized Pavelski's leadership and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, so that's the only one close. But Burns, Meyer, Carlson, right? Not even close. So this one is the one that's going to hurt the most. Even it counts too, you know, Doug Wilson departing, right? There's so many departures, right? Joe Thornton leaving for Toronto. I think that one hurt the fan base a lot too.
That one hurt a lot.
But Joe obviously was not quite, was not even close to his prime. And I think everyone wanted Joe to win too. So they were pretty okay. Like they
would
were
have won.
It was more what support want, for him leaving, right? So, yeah.
What I want people to take away from this is not that, like, you shouldn't feel bad that it hurts. It's that period of Sharks for, like, 20 years was special. And, like, you should feel honestly good that you were a part of something that was special, even if they did win the Stanley Cup. There was something about that Sharks team that was cohesive, and it made people want to play for the Sharks, and it made them want to be better. To the point where, like,
yeah, continuity
and players are coming back after their careers, like Smith and Hannon and Demers,
oh, and Jumbo and Ricci, now, and
Jumbo and Marlowe, and like players want to come back because they want to feel that feeling that you felt as a fan 20 years ago. And like, don't think that because this is over that never happened. It did. It was something that, you know, we got to experience as Sharks fans. And whether or not we didn't win a Stanley Cup, but it was special. So don't forget that it was special, and be sad that it's over. But there is a new era of Sharks.
And let's give credit where it's due too, because he spent a lot of time shitting on his last few years. But that continuity, a lot of it was established by Lombardi at first, but goes to Wilson, right? And he trades for Jumbo. He has Marlowe, right? So Jumbo and Patty, right? Drafts Pavelski. Drafts Vlasic, drafts Couture, drafts Hurdle. And so you have this kind of this 15, 20 years of just basically just these guys just linking to each other, right? You have Marlowe to Jumbo to Pavelski to Couture to Hurdle, and then Burns is in there too, of course, right? And so yeah, it was an incredible run. There's obviously only just one thing missing, but that is the very hard thing to win, so I don't fault Wilson for that part of it. And even the moves in the end there to re-sign Carlson, even moves that didn't, even trading for Kane and re-signing him, right? They were all moves to try to get that elusive title for Jumbo, for Patty, or for Pav. And
So even beyond getting the right draft pick and the right players for the Sharks, that's the part that's hard for Mike Greer, is to get that level of fandom back. That level, that's the hardest job, I think. That's the one.
It's gonna be hard. Yeah,
you're seeing like record low numbers of Sharks fans.
You're gonna keep seeing those because you know absolutely nobody out there, right? So I get all that. But
that's the hardest part to me, is getting that culture back and getting those fans back that experienced that kind of team for 20 years. That's the real challenge, I think.
But
and people don't appreciate that in terms of what Mike Greer needs to do for this rebuild.
But, you know, and this was Wilson's mistake in the end. You weren't going to get it back with the guys that you established it with first. And I understand why you thought you could get it back with them for a year or two there, right? But you weren't going to.
Yeah.
They were just a touch too old to be dominant, and you weren't able to supplement underneath with support players like you were able to do for so long, right? With Donskoy types and guys like that, right? Yeah. And it was going to end. It just was going to end. So
you don't know what you got till it's gone, and it was gone. So
yeah,
but again, I don't feel sad that it, or don't feel like it wasn't real, because the national media will shit on the Sharks for the next, I don't know, 5 years. But it was real, and don't forget it. So that's it. That's my my sign off for the Sharks, because I was there. You all remember that it was a great time, even if it's bad now. So, all right. Anything else? Let's wrap up this trade deadline. This was way more emotional than I thought it would be, but very emotional.
Yeah. No. I'm ready to keep writing, and need something too. And
yeah. So, for sure.
I'm gonna Nico Sturm it the rest of the night. I'm just gonna machine this the rest of the night. So
it's a good idea. I'm gonna go to bed. I hope you guys all have a good week and a great rest of the NHL season. We will see you next week with whatever Sharks news we could dig up, I guess.
If you guys see me around, you guys want to talk some Tomas Hertl. If sort of my optimism about it does that it's still not clear to you, talk to me. I'll be happy to sort of talk with you about it. I know it's a tough day, you know. Again, arguably the worst day in Sharks history. I don't know if that's exaggeration though. I don't know. Can we end with that? Can you think of off the top of your head?
Sharks losing the Stanley Cup to Pittsburgh was the worst day in Sharks history, I think.
Okay. So. But you were still in the final though. So
yeah, I know. But that was the
you're
one.
Still, I think, let me put it this way. I think any fan would take losing the deciding game of the final to this day. So I would say today is still the worst day. You just lost. Yeah. You basically lost two franchise star players, franchise icon players. Maybe not franchise players, but icon players today. Arguably. We obviously don't know what's going to happen with Logan.
I'm going to think on it before I answer, but I'll answer next week. It's a possibility,
right?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right. Hope you guys have a okay week. Bye.